weekdays at 9. And take Dennis everywhere with the AM 870 The Answer app. The AM 870 The Answer app is here. Don't be the last one of your friends to have it. Download it now at the App Store or Google Play. Carry us all around town.
LA Budget Advocates is sponsored by Los Angeles Neighborhood Council Budget Advocates.
With neighborhood council elections expected to continue through the month of June, how many stakeholders are expected to participate, and what, if any, outreach by Dunn or the individual neighborhood councils are doing to bring awareness of this important exercise in the democratic process? I'll have a conversation with the man responsible for the neighborhood council elections for the city of Los Angeles, Mr. Jay Handel, as he lays out what's being done to increase voter turnout through the use of online voting. And the neighborhood council budget advocates made their presentation this past week in front of the Budget and Finance Committee at City Hall. My guest host, Terrence Gomes, will be here to elaborate. All this and our reporter-at-large, Mike Szymanski, will update us on local hot-button issues in East San Fernando Valley. Your neighborhood council starts right here, right now.
Broadcasting live from the YNC News headquarters at the studios of AM 870 The Answer in Glendale, California. This is your neighborhood council with Brandon Pender.
From the desert to the sea, all of Southern California, good evening and welcome to your neighborhood council. I'm Brandon Pender.
Here the day before Mother's Day. Mother's Day is tomorrow. And with me, I have my co-host here, Terrence Gomes. How are you doing, Terry?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, Brandon. Thank you for asking.
Now, before we get into our regular scheduled program here, I wanted to mention something, and we're going to bring you on later on about this, but the budget advocates had did their presentation on Monday in front of the Budget and Finance Committee in, down at City Hall.
Absolutely. And it was a real good meeting with budget and finance. We talked a lot. We brought a lot of things forward that were able to save the city money, to be able to increase productivity, to be able to increase quality of life for the stakeholders for the city of Los Angeles.
And how many budget advocates were at attendance there?
There were six of us there.
Six of them. Okay. Yeah. I mean, what were the topics that you brought up in front of the council?
Well, a lot of them was homeless was a big issue, especially with the report where homelessness now has increased 11%. 85% more people are living either in tents, cars, or shanty towns. So that was a huge topic and what needed to be done for that. We talked a lot about revenue and what the city needs to do to increase revenue. Because when you look at what city council has done, they've basically grabbed all the fruit off the bottom of the tree, the low-hanging fruit. And I actually told the Budget and Finance Committee they need to buy a ladder because they need to get the next level of fruit off the tree because there is nothing else left at that bottom that's easy to get.
Now, the Budget and Finance Committee, who's on that committee?
You have council members Paul Kilcorian, Paul Koretz, Mitch Englander, and Mike Bonin.
And what were the comments after you did your presentation?
I forgot one though. Bloomfield is also on there. I forgot about that one.
Okay, what were the comments after you did your presentation?
They really thanked us for what we do each and every year. They like how we're so thorough about what we actually do, and they also saw that many of the recommendations could be implemented.
Okay, and what else happened at the meeting?
Other than us giving the report, we're pretty covered with that.
Okay, so what was the outcome as far as the determination by the budget advocates? I mean, were there some recommendations based on?
Well, what they did was they asked for what they call a report back, and one of the items was that with sanitation, there's $80 million worth of grants that are available. And I made a recommendation that they hire two people to be able to write and monitor the grants. And one of the concerns was, well, those grants aren't guaranteed. And I said, it's a calculated risk, though. If you're investing $210,000 having employees of the city to be able to go after these grants. Even if we got $40 million, half of that, or $20 million, it's still worth the risk to invest in that. Plus, the city needs that money to be coming back to the city, because that's all tax dollar that we've sent to Washington, and we need to get that money back and be able to spend here in the city.
So what was the response to that by the committee?
Report back. They wanted to know a report back. I gave them the next day. I gave them a lot of information about how the program could work and everything else. And they're doing a report back on that.
So do you perceive there's going to be any type of response, any type of change in anything as far as the committee's?
Well, when you look at the budget advocates and what we've done, there's been 22 recommendations that we've made, or 22 recommendations that have been actually implemented for hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's not only a one-time, it's a continuation of saving money that the city's able to utilize. So we've done that. So I think they're going to implement a few of them this year.
Well, the budget advocates do have a record of saving the city a great deal of money. And a lot of the recommendations have been implemented by the city of Los Angeles to the city council. So hopefully they'll see that, a recommendation from the budget advocates, it's really kind of money in the bank, actually.
It absolutely is. You're absolutely correct on that.
And also, is there another scheduled presentation in front of any other committee besides budget and finance?
Well, budget and finance is the big one, and then we're going to be making a presentation in front of the whole city council, and we're getting a finalized date for that. It's either the 17th, 18th, or 19th. We're not sure exactly when we'll be in front of council, but we'll be there and be able to present more of our reports, more in-depth.
That'll be this month?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so for a program note, we're going to be having up is my guest here is going to be Jay Handel, and Jay Handel is the citywide elections administrator for the city of Los Angeles, and Jay is going to be telling us about some of the upcoming elections in the city for the neighborhood councils. I believe half of the neighborhood councils have already had their elections, and I think some of the results are pending. And some of them are final, but this is going to be something that we're going to be very interesting to see exactly when this is all over, exactly how it went, because this is the first time that the neighborhood councils have used online elections. Before, it was always in person, and there were different types of regulations and requirements implemented for that. But this is the first time they've used online elections, and hopefully this will have resulted in a upswing in the participation in the election process. My first guest is no stranger to controversy. Jay Handel, former co-chair of the Neighborhood Council Budget Advocates, current chairman of the West Los Angeles Neighborhood Council, and at present the director of the Neighborhood Council Elections under DUNN, the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment for the City of Los Angeles. Mr. Handel is a veteran West Los Angeles restaurateur, having been the owner of the popular San Gennaro Cafe from 1987 to 2013, as well as chairman of the board of the Greater West Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce, and a co-chair of the West Los Angeles CPAP. When we come back, we'll have Jay Handel live here in studio at 870 AM, The Answer.
Hello, this is Jill Banks Broad, founder and chair of the Valley Alliance of Neighborhood Councils and president of the Sherman Oaks Neighborhood Council. If you want to improve your community's quality of life and to bring government closer to the people, I urge you to participate as a member of your local neighborhood council's many volunteer committees. You're sure to find a committee to spark your interest. Your neighborhood council needs your participation. To find the neighborhood council in your community, go to www.empowerla.org/councils. www.empowerla.org/councils.
This is James Devitt, the DUI genius. If you've been arrested for a DUI, call me now at 1-800-20-LA-LAW. Even if the police told you you blew a .11, it may be as low as a .05, since the breathalyzer can give false readings. I may be able to save your driver's license and get the case dropped. You can reach me at 1-800-20-LA-LAW or go to DUIGenius.com.
Okay, we're back. In studio here, we have Mr. Jay Handel. Now, Jay, you know, is actually a former co-chair of the Budget Advocates. He was our leader, may I say, for the past, how long have you been a coach? 4 years. How long have you been a Budget Advocate, Jay?
I was chair for 4 years, and I think I was a Budget Advocate a year before that, so 5 years.
And then you were also currently... You're the chair of the West Los Angeles Neighborhood Council?
Proudly.
And how long have you been
February 2007 is when I took chair.
Okay, that's a long time. Listen, exactly what are the duties of the citywide elections administrator, I mean, for the city of Los Angeles, for the neighborhood councils? What, I mean, exactly what do you do?
So basically, I oversee the entire election operation in conjunction with the communications director from Dunn. So it's hiring of staff to be able to verify voters. It's hiring of staff to get out and do polls. It's scheduling. It's coordination between everyone counts, our online group, and elections division, so that we have a seamless election process, both online and analog. Not every neighborhood council is doing online, but we started out with 35. We ended up with, I think, 33 that ended up doing the online elections.
So that is an option for the neighborhood councils, whether or not they want to go online, or it's not a mandatory thing?
Right. This year it was an option, and we had 35 opt in the beginning.
Okay. And the neighborhood council elections, are they run similar to the regular city elections, you know, when you vote for a city council member or mayor or controller?
Well, elections are elections. They're run, you know, in a very similar way when it comes to balloting. But no, our rules are completely different. You know, we're the only elected group, neighborhood councils, that you can live, work, own property, or declare an ongoing community interest in your local community and be able to vote. And in fact, it's the only place that I know of where you can be an undocumented citizen, if you want to say that, and be able to run and be on the board and vote. So it's a big difference.
Well, that's very interesting, because I didn't know that. I mean, you can actually, well, I mean, that's a PC word for saying, I'm not going to get into that, but I mean, so you can be an undocumented resident and actually vote and also run for the neighborhood council.
That's correct. So it's an all-inclusive system of neighborhood empowerment and civic engagement.
I see. Okay. What are the different categories for the different neighborhood councils? I know that some have at-large, you know, candidates. Some have a community interest, which is basically similar to at-large, I guess. But what are the different categories, or the standard different categories that people are running for the different seats, and also for the voters?
Well, again, being such a unique system, there is nothing standard. We have 96 neighborhood councils with 96 different sets of bylaws, and each one of them spell out who they want to be able to come in and run and vote in a category. So you could have homeowner, you could have resident, you could have renter, you could have at-large, you could have community interest, you could have 1099 independent contractor, you could have community organization. There are just so many categories. And each neighborhood council decides what category they want to have their bylaws set up with. Making it, to be perfectly honest, a little difficult for some people to actually figure out if they can get in and vote in the neighborhood council.
So why isn't that standardized? I mean, wouldn't it be much easier if it was all standardized, that each neighborhood council would have the same, threshold of proof?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It makes sense for the city to standardize bylaws.
Okay. And I know at least half of the city with the neighborhood councils have had their elections. Some of their elections haven't been certified yet. Some of them have, and some of them are I guess you're going through the county to the votes and things like that. Who are the other neighborhood councils or have yet had their elections and also have yet finished their registration process?
So the Valley and Hollywood and the Mid-City area have all had their elections already. We're now moving into the East L.A. area, the South L.A. area, the West L.A. area, and the San Pedro Port area. Those will be the areas moving forward. And registration's open for many of the areas right now. Especially the online. If you're an online neighborhood council, you can, and it's unique to the county. It's the first time where people can actually register online for their local neighborhood council, and they can stay home and vote 21 days in advance just by getting on their computer, laptop, phone, any electronic device, and be able to vote from the luxury of wherever they feel like voting from. So I'm really hoping that this is the future for the city of LA as we work the kinks out and, you know, we really smooth out the process of this new technology, that maybe sometime in the 2022-24 area, maybe the city would actually decide to try and pull this civic engagement tool in citywide for city council and mayor.
Okay, well, I mean, wouldn't it, it would be a lot easier if the city... Well, I mean, does the city allow the neighborhood councils to do this mostly on their own, or is this oversaw by the city clerk's office? Or, I mean, how is it done? I mean, take me through the process as a voter or as a candidate. I mean,
so the city clerk and the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment are partnered on the voting.
They're partnered. Okay.
Yeah, they're partnered on it. So what happens is for online voting, you go online to the empowerla.org/elections, and you can click onto the button that says, you know, sign up to be a voter, and it'll give you a scroll down of the 33 neighborhood councils that are doing online voting and those that are live, and then you just fill in all your stakeholder information, your name, address, phone number, and then you have to qualify for some neighborhood councils. We have what we call a documentation or self-affirmation process. Self-affirmation, you only have to show your driver's license or a picture ID just to show you who you are. Documentation is a little more difficult. And again, that's not documentation for an undocumented resident. That's documentation meaning if you're a homeowner, you have to show you prove you own a home. If you're a renter, you have to prove you're a renter. And that makes it a little more difficult. You know, if you're from an organization, you have to have a letter or something from the organization saying that, you know, you volunteer there or you work there and you have an ongoing community interest. They meet often in the neighborhood. So you can go on, you can register, you can upload the documents. We get them downtown, we verify them, and then we batch and send that information to our back-end company, Everyone Counts. And they go ahead and issue a username and pass number. And then you can go online when the link is hot and you can vote right from the comfort of your home.
So this is basically the same process for both the candidate and the voter?
So the candidate can go online, you know, for those. Now there's no more signing up for candidates. Candidates pretty much done at this point.
Nice.
But yes, the way it worked was you would go online to empowerla.org/ I believe it was NCCR or NCCV, and you would upload all your information, a picture, a candidate statement, your proof of why you would be allowed to run for a certain seat in that neighborhood council. You'd be verified by the city clerk and then put up on the website. And then when the candidate filing is closed, you'll have a certified list of candidates for that neighborhood council, and then it's off and running.
So is there anything else that people should know since there are some upcoming elections? I mean, where they can go to, I mean, just run through it again as far as where they need to go to register to vote in their prospective neighborhoods that are still have yet to have their neighborhood council elections.
So what I would tell everybody is go to empowerla.org/elections and then go through that page and see the different things, you know, about the election. And you can also look and see where your find your neighborhood council, so you know what area you live in: Westwood, West LA, Silver Lake, you know, whatever it happens to be. Click on that neighborhood council, and their page will give you all the information about signing up to vote if they're online, or where their election will be, what time their election will be, you know, how long it's going to run, and get involved. That's the big thing. You know, this is the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment, and the whole goal here is to get the people in this city to be involved in their communities, because, you know, people, when the neighborhood's involved, it's a stronger community. So the neighbors have to be involved to make that happen.
Now, coming up, you have Region 7, which has their election on the 14th.
That's correct.
And where's Region 7? Who's in Region 7?
Region 7 is all through the NELA area, Northeast LA.
Northeast Los Angeles. And then following that, you have Region number 8, that they have their elections on the 21st.
That's correct.
And who's in Region
8? And
region
that's 8? Down by, you know, Greater Cypress Park, Arroyo Seco, you know, in that area, which is, again, down the Arroyo Seco corridor.
And name some other regions that are having their elections. I know some of the elections are going to be in June, right?
So Region 9 and Region 10, which is basically the South area from Central, South Central, all the way down to Watts, Voices, and everywhere else, they're coming up after Region 8. And then Region 9, 10, 9, 12, and Porter Ranch. We moved Porter Ranch because of the gas issue. So they would have already been done, but because of the terrible situation they had out there, we worked with them to move their election. So they'll all be coming up in June, as will Region 11, which is the whole west side from South Robertson all the way to the airport.
That's Terry's area.
Absolutely, yeah. South Robertson.
Okay. And so anything else you'd like to get out there as far as, you know, the outreach? I mean, how well are the neighborhood councils doing with the outreach, and how well is done also helping to participate in the outreach? Because, I mean, that's really key in order to get people to come out for the vote.
So we've done a lot of things different this year than we have in the past. We've done outreach from the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. We've done bus shelters. We've done bus benches. We've done pole banners around the city. We contracted and had a lot of collateral designed templates for neighborhood councils to be able to use to get their word out. I would say that the neighborhood councils that spent the money to go out and do it were successful. The neighborhood councils have spent good money, and when I say good money, I say $10,000, $12,000, $14,000 from their budget. If they put something out and touched every one of the mailboxes in their neighborhood at least once, if not twice, they had good candidate calls and they had good elections. And the neighborhood councils that did not spend the money, quite frankly, are not having very good elections. So it's really symptomatic. You know, neighborhood councils get money for a reason. One is to operate, two is to outreach. And those who didn't do the outreach, it's pretty evident from their numbers. So...
Okay, we're going to have you stay in the studio here. We'd like to invite you to stay and be part of our roundtable discussion.
Sure.
And also, I want to have you back, after the elections are over with. There are some things that I want to talk about. And there's some, let me be vague about it, but there's some controversy that is going on in some of the elections. And right now, we have reporters that are waiting to see what the outcome is. But I want to have you on because, I think what happened is because of this is of the first time that the neighbor councils have had the online elections, that there are probably going to be a lot of kinks and bumps that are going to be worked out. I mean, I think probably maybe the next 2 years, it will probably be be smoothed out. But normally when you have something like that for the first time, it is going to be a little bit of a problem up to a certain point. But this program is dedicated to the neighbor councils and the issues in the neighbor councils. So I want to be able to do that. So anyway, we're going to have Jay Handel back, and when we come back, we're going to have Mike Szymanski in studio with us. He's our roving reporter, but he also has a local blog, and I want to hit on a few issues within the neighborhood councils. This is AM 870, The Answer. You listen to your neighborhood council.
California. Southern California? We've got the answer.
With the presidential campaigns in full swing, President Obama, in a commencement address at Howard University today, says there is an easy solution to producing change in America.
People try to make this political thing really complicated. I'm like, well, what kinds of reforms do we need, and how do we need to do that, and what, you know what, just vote.
And he told graduates failing to compromise on critical issues would only lead to frustration. In the Republican media address today, Congressman Steve Chabot of Ohio says he thinks both parties appreciate what small businesses do for America.
There's a lot in Washington that divides us, but in my time in Congress, I've not met one person who believes our small businesses should carry the burden of excessive regulations and complicated taxes.
An unidentified man was struck and killed by a freight train in Industry this morning. Police say the train's conductor saw the man walking on the tracks, sounded the horn, and put on the brakes, but the man stayed on the tracks. Southland weather, scattered clouds and showers into tomorrow morning, then partly sunny. Right now, 62 in Arcadia and 64 in Fullerton. I'm Alan Ross, AM 870, The Answer.
Hi, this is Ed Hoffman with Wholesale Capital, your local direct mortgage lender. With offices in Moreno Valley, Temecula, Corona, Orange, Westlake Village, and Downey to service all of Southern California. For over 20 years, Wholesale Capital has been putting your interest first. If you're in the market for a new home to live in, a vacation home, or an investment property, if you need to refinance, or if you're a senior that's considering that wonderful financing tool known as a reverse mortgage, call me toll-free at 855-640-2020. That's 855-640-2020, or get us on the web at www.wccloans.com.
Start your Memorial Day weekend on Saturday, May 28th with Military Appreciation Day at Battleship Iowa in San Pedro, an impressive example of World War II technology. There's plenty to see and do for families and veterans. Celebrate the American spirit with a full day of free events, from music by the Lindy Sisters to free carnival games and prizes and great all-American food you can buy. Catch a live broadcast of Warren Eckstein's Pet Show or tour the ship with discounted tickets you can only get by logging on to KRLA.info. KRLA.info. Veterans and active military tour the ship free. It's Military Appreciation Day at Battleship Iowa in San Pedro on Saturday, May 28th. A great way to start your Memorial Day weekend. For more information or ship's tour discounted tickets, log on to KRLA.info. Make a day of it on Saturday, the 28th. Brought to you by LAVote.net.
AM 870, The Answer is everywhere. Here's our event director, Pamela.
What if you could have AM 870, The Answer in your purse or in your pocket? Well, now you can on the free, ultra-interactive AM 870, The Answer app. Now you can listen to AM 870 just about anywhere and interact with us. It's available at the App Store on all your mobile devices or at am870.info. That's am870.info.
Info to go. AM 870, The Answer. The 2016 election coverage is now. Let's get it started.
Let's get it started.
All your coverage is right here. AM 870, The Answer.
Let's get it started.
All right, we're back. Okay. My next guest is Mike Zemanski. Mike used to be a contributor to the Studio City Patch. 3 years ago, he started his own blog, the Studio City Community Activism Examiner. He writes on several different issues. He's also a contributor to
the LA School Report.
LA School Report.
It's an independent publication. Also online.
Okay, welcome, Mike. Mike, tell us a little bit about you before we get into some of the topics that we're going to be discussing.
Yeah, okay. I came out to California to work at the Daily News 30 years ago and have worked at the LA Times, Entertainment Weekly, a lot of local publications, and then got hired to run the Studio City Patch. It was the first, when AOL came to California, it was one of the first in Los Angeles, and it was very exciting. I grew up, when I came here, I was in Studio City. That's where I've spent most of my time. I have since bought a house just over the border in Hollywood, but I do everything in Studio City.
So you work in Studio City mostly?
Well, I go to church, go to karate, go to, you know, the the boy, or my nephews both go to schools there, and yeah.
And the Studio City Community Activism Examiner, what type of blog is that? I mean, I know it's you talk about different issues, but I mean, exactly what is it dedicated to?
I just cover issues that are going on in Studio City, interesting people that are there, things that are happening, stores that are opening. So it's essentially, I do a lot of neighborhood council things because that, I believe, is really the crux of what's going on in the city. If you really want to find out what a microcosm of the issues that are going on in the city, whether it's Airbnb or things like that, the mansionizations, all of that really happens at the neighborhood council level. And I think what Jay was saying is really important. It's an amazing process. It's a really great way to get involved in your community. You don't have to be elected to get involved. You can just join, and there are amazing committees. But all of the issues that happen in the city, you find out really the crux of it from the neighborhood councils. It's an amazing kind of thing that's unique to Los Angeles.
Okay, you have a couple of stories for us. I think one of the stories is something to do with the LA school system within the community of Studio City.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm working on for the LA School Report is a series for about affiliated charters. Affiliated charters are kind of a hybrid of the charter school system and the traditional schools. And one of the most popular and oldest in the system is Carpenter Community Charter, which a lot of people went to school as when it was part of the district. And it has incredibly high scores when they had the state test scores. And neighbors people have found out that they've faked addresses to get into the school.
So, you know, one of my kids went to Carpenter, and it is a very good school. And I've met with the principals before, and they're very involved with the kids' education there. They work with the parents a lot. So there, people are trying to get in by simply just faking their addresses. And I mean, how is this being dealt with?
It's a difficult thing for the school because they only have a certain amount of spaces, and they're pretty much close to capacity. An affiliated charter school has to take other people from outside, but their first priority is the neighbors and the neighborhood. And so they've actually had to, when this first came up, had to ask 75 to 100 kids and their families to leave to school and matriculate out of the system. And that is really painful, obviously, for the principal. Joe Martinez is a great principal there. He just renewed the affiliated charter system for another 5 years, so they got approved another 5 years to be that system. And they're going to keep going with it.
And so are they going to have to let some of the students go there because they're not really qualified to attend? Or
they stop the ones that are not allowed to be there. They've actually gone out. So now the problem is when they get new applications, they actually have to screen those. And they still find 75-200 almost every year, like, no, you can't come in.
So they check the addresses.
They do home visits.
They do home visits.
The principal himself goes out there.
I see. Okay.
And they have to hire a full-time person to check this too.
And is this a story that's ongoing, or
is ongoing. It's been going on for 4 years now. I started covering it when I was at Patch, and it's still an issue. And ironically, but because of that, it's been happening in other areas all around the city. And so it's become a problem throughout the district in schools that people want to get into.
And now you have another story. This involves Dunn and what's going over at Studio City Neighborhood Council with their past election. What is that?
Well, that election has been kind of a nightmare, and it's been a real problem for a lot of people who were disenfranchised specifically because of the online voting and also the problems that the neighborhood council themselves created by requiring documentation. It's a virtual who's who of important people in Studio City including Paul Kerkorian, including Wendy Grohl, including actors Mike Farrell and Brian Mahoney, who could not vote. The Mr. and Mrs. Studio City is Alan and Beth Diamond. They were not allowed to vote. They were disenfranchised from voting. The process was so difficult and so unwieldy, and I actually really believe that the whole election in that case should be thrown out and start all over again.
Well, right now there's some kind of determination that's going to be happening here pretty soon regarding the.
Well, not about the election. There is tomorrow on Monday. There is a hearing, a rehearing of a grievance of electioneering for two of the candidates, who are actually at one point they actually were kicked off. There was a decision made that they were electioneering, but now that case is going to be reheard on Monday. But that it doesn't have anything to do with the overall election. It's not going to throw the whole election off.
It's something that's specific to Studio City.
But I know that there are people who want to just do the whole election again, which I don't think is going to happen, but that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I understand. It's that may not be possible only for various reasons, but I believe more so because of the financial part of it. I don't think they really have the money to do that election.
Well, I think the whole point is that for what Dunn is all about and Neighborhood Council is all about is to get people in the community to be involved, and there were a lot of people who wanted to be involved who couldn't get involved, and that is a problem, and that kind of whole thing needs to be sorted out.
Okay. What else do you have for us? You have anything else that's on your blog that you want to bring to our show?
Well, there's always things going on in Studio City that are pretty fascinating. I have a couple of stories coming up of some local people who are doing really great things. Susan McMartin, who was our Studio City Mom columnist at Patch, has a movie coming out with Eddie Murphy very soon, and it's about her life, and it's going to be very exciting. She's lived in Studio City a lot of the last 10 years, and she writes for the sitcom Moms. And she's one of the great great success stories of our local community.
Okay, thank you, Mike. I mean, we'd like to have you back, and if you know to give us a little bit of news that's happening. Actually, well, I really want you to follow up on what's going on with that grievance process over in Studio City. Okay, we'll be back. This is the your neighborhood council. And you're listening to us on AM 870, The Answer.
I'm Officer Lewis with LAPD North Hollywood Division. I'm the Senior Lead Officer for Studio City. Here's your Neighborhood Council's public safety tip of the day, preventing burglaries. Most burglaries occur during the day, and most suspects knock on the front door to see if anybody's home. If you're home and you hear somebody at your door, please go to the door to make sure that person knows you're home. Otherwise, in a minute or two later, you just might hear somebody breaking down your back door. Don't be a victim. You can make a difference in helping us deter crime. Hi, this is Officer Rob Benavides, Senior Lead Officer for Toluca Lake, with your Neighborhood Council's Public Safety Tip of the Week. Car break-ins and thefts from vehicles account for approximately 40% of crime in the Southeast Valley. Many of these crimes can be prevented. Car burglars can be in and out of your car in a matter of seconds and are often looking for a quick, easy target. An iPad, cell phone, purse, or whatever other valuable items have been left in the car by the owner. Simply removing these items from your vehicle can make a difference in you becoming a victim. Don't be a victim.
Hi, I'm Captain Stacy Gerlich of the Los Angeles Fire Department with your Neighborhood Council Public Safety Tip of the Week. Disaster strikes when you least expect it. Be prepared. Have a plan in case of emergencies. Develop an evacuation plan in your home and at work. If you have children, know your child's school plan so you'll know where to pick them up following a disaster or other situation. Prepare a go kit for each family member with at least 3 to 5 days of food, water, medications, and small denominations of cash. Make sure you have a working flashlight, portable radio, and clean clothing. Write down any medical issues you may have and put them on your person to use if needed. And don't forget to learn how to shut off all utilities and help your neighbors do so if they are not able. Above all, remain calm, try not to panic, and follow the proper procedures. You'll have a better chance to survive and ride out the disaster. For more information on preparedness, please visit cert-la.com. That's cert-la.com. Growing up!
Welcome back to your neighborhood council. As a program note, next week we're going to have here in studio Kevin James. Kevin James is the president of the Board of Public Works. He used to be right here on this station, as a matter of fact. He had his show. I think it used to be midnight to 3 a.m. or something like that. And also, we're hoping to have the Honorable Mayor Eric Garcetti. Is he going to be calling in?
That's what we're trying to schedule right now. Okay. He's a very busy man. He's all over the city, so that's what we're trying to do. And we're also going to be having somebody from Los Angeles Police Protective League also.
Who is that?
That's what we're working on right now, because President Craig Lawley will be in Washington, D.C., and because of the time difference for when we do our broadcast, he won't be able to do it, but we're getting a couple people who would really be able to talk about the budget and how the police department and rank and file would work within that.
Okay, and so you know, keep that in mind. Next week we'll have that. We haven't really decided if we're going to be having call-ins for that or not, but if we do, I will, at the start of the show, you will know as soon as the show starts, because we'll be promoting that and you will be able to call in. Anyway, what I want to do, since I do have Jay Handel here, along with Terrence Gomes and Mike Zamansky, I do want to talk about, since this is a neighborhood council show, I want to talk about the value of the neighborhood councils as far as the contributing to the improvement of the city. Neighborhood councils, as you know, and Jay Handel, who is a former budget advocate and has been involved with the neighborhood councils for a very long time. Jay, I mean, what are some of the things that the people should know so we don't really take for granted, you know, the things that happen in the neighborhood, you know, and we're not really recognizing a lot of those things are as a result of neighborhood councils basically getting together with their committees and passing motions, following through with those motions at City Hall, and also going to the budget advocates and getting the city to basically do certain things that they would normally not really do because they have no knowledge of those situations that are like improvement, like, you know, like the potholes in the city or the broken up streets that need to be repaired, things like that.
So let's talk about the value of neighborhood councils to the citizens and to the elected officials of our city. There's approximately 1,850 neighborhood council people. That means there are 1,850 free laborers putting in anywhere from 15 to 40, 50 hours or more a month, giving to their city, giving to their community, watching for the potholes, reporting graffiti, working with public works, working with the parks department, working with the people who do the trees and just every part of the city, planning issues, having meetings with developers and trying to come to terms with the development coming into the community that maybe the people aren't very thrilled about, but they're able to work with developers to make it a better project coming into their area. Being the citizens' oversight, the watchdogs of what's going on. Neighborhood councils are now about 16 years old, and they're growing up. So, you know, have they come to full fruition yet? No. But have they come from 0 to 60 pretty quickly? Absolutely. Neighborhood councils have no legal power. They're advisory. But the fact is now neighborhood councils are getting more and more important to the city council people. It's almost as if neighborhood council people are becoming like city council field deputies because we're taking the calls from people who can't get answers from city council deputies or from departments, people who don't know how to navigate the system. So we're there to help the people, the average citizen. And that's part of what the charter says. The charter says our job is to help report on deliverables to the people and to the elected officials. So that's exactly what neighborhood councils should be doing and in many, many, many cases are doing. So it's free labor for the city. It's a wonderful opportunity for people to be engaged.
It is. That is true. You know, it's a good, they are the sounding board to the council people. And if the council people want to know what's going on with the neighborhood, this is the sounding board for them. And it is kind of a joke because the Studio City's outgoing president, John Walker, who is pretty well known and well respected, used to joke, there's no power, there's no money in this. And there was always a perception that there was money and power, but there's nothing in that. In the neighborhood council, it's really an act of love. And yet there is amazing community activism that comes out of it. For example, the RFA issues, which helps McMansionization, that was created in Studio City and is possibly being used as a model for the rest of the city in development. And actually other parts of the country are looking at what came out of what was hammered out with Paul Kerkorian. And I did a story about that for Ventura Boulevard magazine this past year. So things that are hammered out by these free laborers are actually looked at throughout the city and the country.
But I would also a little bit disagree, though. I think the power that the neighborhood councils have is the power that they actually take. And when you look at policy and look at what the neighborhood councils have done when it comes to policy, homelessness, huge issue in the city of Los Angeles. If it wasn't for Jay Handel, Bob Rosbach from the West Side, me as the chair for the Los Angeles Neighborhood Council Coalition, we would have never have had state of emergency. Thank you. I almost lost it for a second. State of emergency with homelessness. The alliance, the Los Angeles Neighborhood Council Alliance, on January 3rd, 2015, had declared and voted for all the neighborhood councils to actually vote and send to their city council members and to the mayor that they actually declare a state of emergency and dedicate $150 million immediately to be able to help the crisis. And what did they do? 4 months later, Council President Wesson, the mayor were on City Hall steps declaring a state of emergency. And then in this budget, it's not $150 million, it's $138 million. I think that's all they could find inside the cushions of the couch, though, was the $138 million. But they are working harder on it to be able to do it. But it is about policy and what we can drive.
Well, I think what he's trying to say, not power, not having power, there's no power in it. It's no individual power. I mean, the individual person that works
the perceived power over the community or whatever.
Yeah. You're right about that. The neighborhood councils have the power. They exercise it if they know how to exercise it. They exercise it and go to City Hall and get certain things done. I mean, when you have a situation with, say, for instance, in public safety, you have a situation of maybe either homelessness or graffitis or people that are doing vandalism or door knocking, for instance, or for home burglaries and things like that. You know, the people come to the neighborhood council, they visit their neighborhood council public safety committee, for instance. They basically say what's going on in their little area there, and they put together some sort of a wish list or a watch list. They take it, put it into a motion, take it to the neighborhood council, and get the neighborhood council to pass the motion. And then we also talk to the Los Angeles Police Department, try to get more patrols in that area, try to get the police to do a little bit more because maybe they are unaware about what's really going on unless somebody complains about it. So, I mean, the neighborhood councils in that respect get a little bit more action from the city services than the average person who gets on the phone and calls up and complains and says, you know, whatever. Or they don't want to because they don't think anybody's going to pay them any attention.
And sure. some of the council people don't listen to the neighborhood councils either.
Absolutely. Well, it all depends upon how you've developed a relationship. It's all about relationships.
Well, I mean, yeah, Studio City one time had three council people that they had to address.
We have
that
two.
Was a problem. Yeah.
We have two. Sometimes, you know, we work with both of them. Sometimes we need to go to one because it's a better fit or because of the actual neighborhood that the issue is in. We would have to go to that council member and work with their deputies to be able to get action going on with it. So,
but the one thing I think that maybe Mike was getting at, you know, some neighborhood councils are perceived to be not functioning as well as others. And there Agreed. Are city council members who tell developers, you know, don't bother going to that neighborhood council or just go do the checkbox and come to us and we'll take care of it. And again, I think that's where neighborhood councils have to really get their act together and be the voice of the people. Because, again, if you go to a good neighborhood council meeting, you know, a really active neighborhood council, you'll see senior lead officers reporting. You'll see the new fire department, regional people coming and reporting. You'll see state senators, peoples coming and reporting, assembly peoples, the mayor's people. You know, it's a whole array. It's a place for people to come and get information about their community they would never be able to get in one spot. So, you know, neighborhood councils have a hugely big function in their community. And as neighborhood councils grow and get stronger, I think that the wave of the future is, you know, seeing the city really breaking up, you know, in a sense, with neighborhood councils, giving neighborhood councils more authority and power down the line as they mature, and finding a bigger role for neighborhood councils like the city of New York has.
And the history of the neighborhood council was because of the Valley Secession movement. Really.
Hollywood and the harbor also, they were all a part of that.
Yeah.
So.
So it was to give the communities more involvement in their government. And I think.
Which was a good thing. I mean, I think that was a wake up call for the city.
Yeah.
And that, when that occurred and opened the door for the creation of the neighborhood council.
Sure. Well, think about it. My neighborhood council in West L.A. has a little over 21,000 people. Okay, and I've got 15 board members. Councilmember Bonin has 250,000 people, and he's got to have three offices, and how many people to try and cover and service 250,000 people? It can't be done. There's no city council office that can truly represent all of the people in their district and be responsive to them in a timely manner. So neighborhood councils are really the new front line for the stakeholders to go to for city services and information. And it's our responsibility as neighborhood council people to fulfill that obligation and to use our money wisely to get the word out, to let the people in the neighborhoods know neighborhood councils exist, because that is the biggest Achilles heel currently of neighborhood councils, that probably 95% of the city doesn't even know there are neighborhood councils, and they've been around for 16 years.
And okay, that
we're running out of time here, but we're going to continue this discussion. And I want to ask Jay to come back, anytime he wants, but particularly after the neighborhood council elections are all over with. And so we can discuss certain matters that everybody really wants to know about the neighborhood council elections, and also Terry, what's next up for the budget advocates?
Well, like I said earlier, well, we're having the show next Saturday. We'll be on.
Right, but I mean, other than the show,
well, we're going to be in front of city council, and we're also going to be doing more of our due diligence, though, because actually, budget day. Again, because we want to be at the beginning of the budget, so we're going to be having budget day on July 30th at City Hall in Council Chambers. We have Council President Wesson, Ron Galperin's going to be there, Miguel Santana, who's been on the show. Also, Ron was on the show, and hopefully the mayor will be there.
Okay, and we're probably hopefully going to try to get some sound bites for our show for budget day.
While we're there, yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
Mike, and I want to hear from you too, because I like to hear about the sportsman's landing situation in Studio City, as well as the Harvard Westlake.
Lots of stuff going on.
All right. So next week we'll have the Honorable Mayor Eric Garcetti, as well as Kevin James. And also, stay tuned tomorrow morning for my good friend and colleague, Brock Lurie, Attorney Brock Lurie, as his show starts at 10 a.m. Brock has a great show. So until then, this is Brandon Pender with Jay, Terry, and Mike saying we love you, Los Angeles, and this is your neighborhood council.
Good night.
And happy Mother's Day.
Absolutely.
LA Budget Advocates was sponsored by Los Angeles Neighborhood Council Budget Advocates.
Here's an important presidential primary voter update from Dean Logan, LA Registrar, Recorder, County Clerk.
The upcoming June 7th California presidential primary is closely approaching. All voters can vote in a primary election, but voting for president depends on the political party you are registered to vote with. If you registered to vote with no party preference, you can request a ballot for the Democratic, American Independent, or Libertarian parties at your polling place, or if you vote by mail, you can request a party ballot using the application on the back of your sample ballot. If you registered to vote with no party preference and want to vote in the Republican, Green, or Peace and Freedom Party, you must re-register to vote with that party by May 23rd. Voters are encouraged to visit lavote.net to read, download, and print more information on the June 7th presidential primary. Know your party, know the rules, and make sure you're ready to make your mark. The last day to register to vote is May 23rd, and the last day to apply to vote by mail is May 31st. Make your mark in the California presidential primary and visit lavote.net for more information.
Here is our event director, Pamela, with your info to go.
Join Warren Eckstein from The Pet Show Saturday, May 14th, live from the Red Barn in Tarzana. We'll have beautiful pets ready for adoption, great sales, and free samples. And Brian Whitman from The Morning Answer will be there from 11 to 1. No tickets needed. All pets are welcome. So join us May 14th at the Red Barn in Tarzana. For more info, visit am870theanswer.info and click on the Red Barn banner.
Info to go on AM 870 The Answer. The brand.